The day after I finished my HSC exams, just 10 years ago or so, I started work at David Jones. Classy. I was looking forward to it. Back then in, the 80s, I give it away. David Jones was, it had pianos playing in the foyer. It had doormen that opened the doors for you. It was classy. And I thought, this is going to be cool. Then I started work and I found myself three levels below street level in the dungeon. And what the customer sees and what I got was a complete contrast. It was dirty. It was messy. It was chaotic. The rats were the size of cats, I kid you not. And it was a pretty scary place. That was the behind-the-scenes look. Daniel 7 to 12 is a classic behind-the-scenes look, which, can I say, might appear at first a little chaotic and scary, but I'm actually going to say to you, what we've just read is an incredibly precious look behind the scenes, because we're actually given an insight into the mind and the plans and the purposes of Almighty God. How good is that? Daniel 7 takes us behind the scenes, but I'm going to suggest to you it's actually the reverse of DJs. So DJs, it appeared on the surface pretty cool, chaotic behind the scenes. I'm going to suggest to you Daniel, the man, is living in the chaos. And God actually gives him a vision which clears everything up and which gives him purpose and inspiration and delight. Have you heard me correct? What we just read in the Bible is crystal clear, is beautiful, gives us directions, and that is not the chaotic part. Some of you doubt. It was an interesting Bible reading, wasn't it? It feels fairly chaotic in how it's written. But have a think about this. The book of Daniel is written in a time when Daniel and his friends are captured, taken to Babylon from Jerusalem. Jerusalem is destroyed. The temple is destroyed. Current leaders, potential leaders, they're all taken to Babylon. It looks to all intents and purposes as though aggressive human forces are in control and God is not. God either has left the building, God doesn't care anymore, but from an Israelite point of view, life is chaos. It's terrible. But Daniel is about to get a view of what true reality is like, and it is beautiful and it is amazing. And friends, in the end, that's why God gave us these visions, to remind us that in the chaos of life, there is a God that is ruling everything, and that is true reality. And we can trust him, and he is bringing his purposes about. God makes it clear to Daniel that even though these human kingdoms that would appear to be in control, even though they're allowed some temporary success, they're not going to reign forever. In the end, God is going to install his king on Zion, his holy hill, and he will reign forever. Daniel 7 to 12 is a series of four visions, hence we've got four talks, which means the last one will be quite long, chapters 10, 11 and 12. Chapter 7, this one here, it's almost an overview of everything that happens, and the others, in a sense, sort of fit in amongst it. So, what is Daniel showing? Let me give you, I guess, the overview, the big feel, first of all. The when does this happen? Verse 1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. That tells us straight away that Daniel 7 is suddenly not chronological, because Belshazzar's come and gone by the time we get to Daniel 7. So what we've got is we've got this chronological events of Daniel's life in chapters 1 to 6, and then we've got a series of four visions in 7 to 12. This vision actually happens sometime between chapters 4 and 5. By then, Daniel's been in Babylon for more than 50 years. What is in the chapter? Well, it's pretty simple. Four beasts, the Ancient of Days, the Son of Man, an interpretation, and the whole chapter finishes with Daniel feeling rotten because of what he's just seen. Now, we're going to take that and we're about to unpack it all, because there's obviously plenty of detail in there. But before we do that, just a quick word on what we call apocalyptic writing. You'll find this kind of writing in the book of Daniel, in Ezekiel, in Revelation, obviously, just to name a few. And it's this big picture imagery that is all a bit scary. The word apocalyptic simply means to reveal. So this is God revealing his purposes to us. It's where we get the name of the book of Revelation from. So here's some tips. While it's nice to sort of go into the minor details, and you know, you can write books on those or start your own religion, what I want you to do is get a big feel for what God is saying. And his point is simple. In the midst of this chaos, I am in control. All right, so keep that big feel. Secondly, when you come to numbers, most of the time numbers are used symbolically, as are some of the pictures, e.g. the beasts. So think of it that way. And then thirdly, sort of related to point one, when you're trying to identify what's there, don't worry too much if you can't. All right, if the text tells you what something is, you know for sure. E.g., in chapter 8, we're introduced to two new beasts. We're told who they are. But if we're not told for sure, then you've just got to hold it a bit more loosely. All right, we can work out from other parts of the Bible roughly what is meant, but we can't be precise with every single detail in apocalyptic. So let's begin. Verse 2. Daniel said, "In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me were four winds of heaven churning up the great sea. Four great beasts, each different from the others, came up out of the sea." It's been a while since we've looked at the book of Daniel. Where do you find four things followed by? So imagine the four beasts followed by the Ancient of Days. In one of the other chapters, we find four particular things followed by something of God. Testing you. Joe, what do you reckon? Yeah, the statue and the rock, Daniel chapter 2. I'm going to suggest to you this is actually a parallel chapter. It's talking about the same things, but that was Nebuchadnezzar's dream. This one's Daniel's dream. So the statue with the four elements in it, and then the rock which smashes it. We've got the same kind of thing here. So in Bible study this week, be good to go back and read Daniel 2. Trouble is about to arise from the sea. The sea represents chaos and wickedness. So we're told right from the start that whatever is coming is not good. It's going to be evil. The wind is churning up the sea. The wind is coming from all four directions. And that's just symbolic of saying it's coming from everywhere. This trouble, this chaos is going to come from everywhere. So if we're talking about opposition to God from these beasts, and that's what they represent, the beasts are sort of going to represent opposition to God coming from all over the place, as well as representing four particular kingdoms, which verse 17 tells us they are. Let's have a look at the four beasts. Verse 4. "The first was like a lion, and it had the wings of an eagle. I watched until its wings were torn off and it was lifted from the ground so that it stood on 2 feet like a human being, and the mind of a human was given to it." In ancient history, the lion is nearly always symbolic of the kingdom of Babylon, the current kingdom, the kingdom that they're in. Even today, you go to modern-day Iraq or go back to the Gulf Wars, Saddam Hussein used the imagery of the lion to frighten his enemies. So the lion represents Babylon. The lion here is combined with an eagle. What would that suggest? It suggests kingship, speed, strength. The animals sort of represent sort of those attributes. But we've also got a human aspect here. It's really interesting. And when I read it, we can't be too sure what it means, but this animal almost morphs into a human. It's almost like Daniel 4, where Nebuchadnezzar was that animal and became human again, or something like that. Verse 5, the second one. "And there before me was a second beast, which looked like a bear. It was raised up on one of its sides, and it had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It was told, 'Get up and eat your fill of flesh.' This is a bear that's still finishing off its last meal. It's got ribs sticking out of its mouth. Fairly scary. Interestingly, it's raised up on one of its sides. Historically, the kingdom with a two-sided creature that represented it was the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. And historically, they came straight after Babylon as well. In fact, even in Daniel's lifetime, the Persian Empire would succeed the Babylonian Empire and kill Nebuchadnezzar's son. They were also the empire that allowed the Jews to return home. Verse 6, third beast. After that, I looked, and there before me was another beast, one that looked like a leopard. And on its back, it had four wings like those of a bird. This beast had four heads, and it was given authority to rule. With the benefit of hindsight, we know the empire that followed the Babylonians, then the Medes and the Persians, was the great empire of Alexander the Great, the Greeks. They ruled and they conquered rapidly, perhaps hence the leopard. Alexander conquered the known world then, got to India before he was in his mid-30s, and then he died. When Alexander died, his kingdom, which had grown so rapidly, broke into, you can almost guess from the animal, broke into four, with four different rulers succeeding him. And then we come to the fourth beast. Verse 7, after that in my vision at night I looked, and there before me was a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. It had large iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. It was different from all the former beasts, and it had 10 horns. It's almost as though comparisons fail Daniel at this point. He doesn't mention another animal. This is just a terrifying beast. It's got 5 times the normal number of horns that an animal would have. It's got iron teeth, which, you know, it's sort of, you get the feel of this extreme crushing strength in its jaws. It would destroy. We're told twice it's different from all the other beasts. There's something different about it. It's the only one that Daniel asks about later on. In verse 8, which we didn't quite read, there's a little horn that arises out of the beast. And the horns represent kingdoms, and this kingdom is personified. So it's got eyes and a mouth in it. We read about the little horn then in verse 21. This little horn is waging war against God's holy people. The beast itself, if we parallel the kingdoms to Daniel chapter 2, and if we look at the flow of history, this beast represents Rome, the mighty Roman Empire, the greatest empire that had ever been seen and perhaps has ever been seen. Suggestions about what the little horn is are far less certain. I could give you 2 or 3 possibilities, but I'm not going to. I'll explain later why I'm not going to, mainly because in the end, I actually don't think it matters. In verses 19 and 20, Daniel asks the question of the meaning of the fourth beast. And the angel, if it's an angel that responds, says that the fourth beast is going to be the most powerful one. It will control 10 kingdoms and it will conquer the world. This is all in verses 23 to 27. Another king is going to arise, and he's going to, if you like, usurp 3 of the kings that already exist. And he's going to support the beast in speaking out against God and against his people. He's even going to work through the legal system to change laws in his oppression of God's people. Ironically, we see that happening in country after country, where the laws are being used to make it incredibly hard for God's people to live. His reign of oppression, verse 25, will last for a time, times, and half a time. It's going to take us a couple of weeks to get used to this kind of language, but read it through a few times, it'll start to make sense. In Aramaic, in which this chapter is written, a time is a year. So It will last for a time, times and half a time. A time, a year. Times is double that, 2 years. And then half a time, half a year. So we're looking at a cumulative number of 3.5 years that this reign will be for. Remember that numbers are symbolic, but that number 3.5 is going to appear again. So I'm not going to say anything about it right now. You'll have to wait for that one. It's possible, as I said, to make guesses as to what the little horn might be. And many have tried. I'm going to suggest to you there's two dangers when you read apocalyptic language. One is to say, well, I can't understand this, forget about it. The other one is to really dwell upon it way too much and make too much of things that we actually can't be too sure about. For a whole year, once a week, I met with a group of JWs. After 1 year, I gave up because we had not moved out of Daniel. I think they were spending a little bit too long trying to make a message out of what actually wasn't there, in my opinion. The text doesn't identify this little horn. In the end, as I said before, I don't think it really matters for two reasons. Number one, the beast isn't actually something that God's people should be worried about. Yeah, look, for a period, he will reign chaos. But in the end, verse 11, the beast is slain. His body is destroyed. It's thrown into the blazing fire. Three different ways to describe death. It's like triple destruction there. God's not intimidated by the beast. God destroys it with ease. Don't be worried about the beast. The second reason why we don't really need to precisely identify every single thing is that on one level, the four beasts represent four sequential kingdoms: Babylon, Medes and Persians, Greece, Rome. But at the same time, there's actually a deliberate unclarity about how this is described. And that is because this is apocalyptic language. And in apocalyptic language, there is nearly always a timeless application there. In other words, yes, it's initially four empires. We're told it's four kingdoms. But it's bigger than that. It means more than that. Apocalyptic language tends to work in recurring patterns, tends to be bigger than just referring to one person or one kingdom. It really describes a period of history. And that's what we're doing here. We're actually having human history and human power described as beasts. It's, if you like, the beastliness of human power left unchecked. This beast appears again in Revelation 13, but he's a composite of these beasts. And once again there, he's not referring to one individual, he's referring to the period of time and the total opposition to God that God's people will face. And we will face that opposition until Jesus returns. So in one sense, we're actually still living in the time of the fourth beast now, because we're living in a time when God and his people are opposed by the things of this world. Well, just as Daniel's trying to understand these beasts and what they're about, the scene suddenly changes. Verse 9. As I looked, thrones were set in place, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was as white as snow. The hair of his head was white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire, and its wheels were all ablaze. A river of fire was flowing, coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands attended him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated and the books were opened. If you're ever feeling a bit low, friends, just open Daniel 7 and read this description, because it is awesome. It is a majestic description of the throne room of the Almighty God. He is described as the Ancient of Days. His days are beyond our counting. He has seen it all. He knows everything. He is the beginning. He is the end. Kingdoms have come and gone. Rulers have risen and fallen. But God endures above all and beyond all. That is the Ancient of Days. He's described as being all white, even the hair of his head. And that's a symbol of purity. And we know that that is true of God. He is all holy. Nothing impure or evil can tarnish him. Then we get these descriptions of fire. His throne is ablaze. Fire flows from him like a river. And this is representing God's judgment. That's often what fire represents. And particularly here, we're in a judgment court. And this is God's judgment being poured out over all the earth. He's powerful. There are 10,000 times 10,000 standing before him. I want you to stop and think. If you think this is an amazing description, and it is, one day you will be amongst those 10,000 times 10,000 standing before the throne of the Ancient of Days and worshipping him. You will be at this scene yourself. What's going on in the throne room? Well, judgment. We see that in verses 11 and 12. The throne of the Ancient of Days is the throne of the judge. He takes his seat and court is now in session. The books are opened and the trial is about to begin. We also read of books being opened in Revelation 20. I suspect they're the same books. The fourth terrifying beast is now destroyed and thrown into the blazing fire. Did you see how easily it happened? It just happened. There's no comparison. Even when the most terrifying beast who would conquer and kill and maim and destroy God's opponents, even when he comes before God, he is nothing. When the time comes for judgment, he is utterly powerless and he is destroyed, as are all who oppose the Ancient of Days. That's pretty awesome. It gets even better. Verse 13, in my vision at night I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and people of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. At a very basic level, that description, Son of Man, simply means he is human. That's what it means in the original language. So far, we've only had beasts. Now we have a human, or one like a human, is the description. But he's so much more than that, isn't he? It's so clear from this description that he is special. He comes with the clouds of heaven. That's a description of deity, of God. And so we've got one who is like us, but is also like God at the same time. He is able to approach the Ancient of Days and be in his presence. And when he does that, he is given all authority and power. Everyone worships him, and his kingdom lasts forever. Friends, this is the rock of Daniel 2 that smashes the statue, that destroys all other kingdoms and establishes itself forever. This is God's installed king of Psalm 2. This is the one also in Psalm 2 that God says, you are my son. And by using that term, son of man, this vision signals something special. It signals a kingship that actually goes beyond Israel and goes to all of humankind, son of man. Friends, we are privileged. Several times in the Bible, we read that the prophets of old long to look into what we know. We are privileged because we see with clarity. We know who this Son of Man is. 81 times in the Gospels, Jesus refers to himself as Son of Man. On the last day of his life, Jesus is asked the question, are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One? And Jesus chooses to answer that question using the words, or using the ideas, of Daniel 7:13. Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One? I am. And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven. Where are these words spoken? Jesus' trial. Jesus is answering the high priest. He's been arrested, beaten, shamed, spat on, ridiculed by his enemies. And once again, if we just look on the surface, it looks like things are out of control. It looks as though Jesus will be crushed and destroyed. And once again, friends, we need to look at the true reality. The true reality where the Son of Man is enthroned as the King of Kings. And as Jesus utters these words to the high priest, he is in effect saying, I am the one to whom all authority and power is given. I am the one who has an everlasting dominion. I am the one to whom all will bow down and worship. For a time, God allowed that power to be in the hands of the Jews and the Romans. For a time, until his son was killed and became that sacrifice for all who put their trust in him. We've got a verse of the month this year. Let's put it up. It's always good to know the context of your verse of the month, and this is a pretty good one. One like a Son of Man comes into the presence of the Ancient of Days, and the Ancient of Days gives him this authority. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. Friends, let me wrap just a few things together, a few take-home points. As Christians, we live in a world where sometimes we may look weak, we may look defeated, we may be ridiculed for what we believe, we may be made to look stupid and pathetic, but we are the ones who have been shown behind the scenes. We are the ones who understand that all earthly powers, incredible and awesome and powerful as they seem right now, will one day disappear. And there will only be one kingdom left standing, one authority and one power, because all of that has been given to Jesus. We belong to a king who will rule forever. And therefore, there's nothing we need to fear in this world. There's no embarrassment we need to be worried about. There's nothing we need to be ashamed of. There's nothing we need to be intimidated by. Daniel lived in a far more chaotic time than we did, a time when the kingdoms of the world looked powerful and terrifying, a time when it really everyone was out to get him. And yet he never feared what the kings of the world might do to him because he trusted in the God who was far more powerful than they were. Daniel recorded these visions down, and God gave him these visions because Daniel did not want his fellow Israelites, who had been in captivity for over 50 years, Daniel did not want them to lose hope, but rather to see that God's victory was certain, to see that one day they would return home, and so to dedicate themselves to his great purposes. You may have found the text a little confusing today. It will grow on you. After 4 weeks, you'll be getting it, and then we move on. That's okay. But the big message is simple, and don't miss the big message. Despite whatever circumstances you find yourself in at the moment, despite any present difficulties, despite whatever your current reality might look like, there is a greater reality. God is working his purposes out, and we are part of what God is doing in this world. His victory is certain. Trust him and commit your ways to him. And in the end, verse 18, the holy people of the Most High will receive the kingdom and will possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. Let me pray. Great God and Father, we thank you that you rule over heaven and earth, that no evil power can overthrow your kingdom. Give us grace to believe when doubts arise. Give us courage to stand firm when our wills are weak. And give us a renewed vision of your kingdom when our hearts are faint. We ask this in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, the Son of Man, to whom you have given all authority, power, and glory. Amen.